they're thinking, how did you transition from an investor, you know, who had a couple of properties, to a developer? And I said, I just decided to.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tarun Shum, and in this episode, we continue our conversation with Michael Lin, a business owner and property developer. We learn more about his current developments, his development strategies, and delve into his favorite resources that have inspired him throughout his journey. Lin explains how a shift in his mindset sparked his journey in property development.
I've had to manage the builds, and these are not, I guess, the fundamentals are the same when the process is the same if you were to be a developer or if you were an owner occupier, right? The process is the same to build a house as a developer or to build a house to live in. It's exactly the same in terms of the mechanics. But I would say that the mindset shifted when we made a conscious decision to be property developers. And we actually were in the process of building a granny flat when that happened. And, you know, I have a mentor who told me, you know, what are you doing? And I said, I'm doing a granny flat. And he goes, oh, I thought you wanted to be a developer. I'm like, I do, but I have to finish this granny flat first. Then I'll find a development project, like at least a duplex or a triplex or a four pack or something like that. He goes, why not start now? And I said, what do you mean? How can I start now? I have to finish this. And he said, well, no, development is just a mindset. You know, you decide you're a developer and now you're a developer. That's all it is. So I thought, okay, I'm always never say no, you know, until you actually try it. So I made that decision with my fiance, and she was like, okay, let's just be property developers. And we started it's not obvious, but that conscious decision made, I don't know, like a big shift in our trajectory as developers, because we started treating our little granny flat build as a development project. We started implementing systems.
He expands on some of these systems that they implemented.
We started chasing up people a lot faster and just treating it like it's a business. And these are things that I already do in business, but for some reason I didn't apply to my property business. It's a weird thing that I've noticed, where you have certain inherent wisdoms and lessons that you've learned, but you only apply them to the area where you had to get burnt, but you don't apply it somewhere else, even though it's exactly the same thing again and again and again. It's perfectly applicable. So when we made that decision to be property developers, our project just took off. And mind you, before that, before even with my experience, before we made that decision, I actually had a huge delay with my granny flat, and my confidence was shot because I had to take my builder to fair trading, which was, you know, I was thinking to myself, God, if I can't build a granny flat, what kind of developer am I going to be? But when I had that conversation with my mentor, it just changed things. Things happened, and it got built in 3 months straight away. So I thought, oh, that's it. It just made things easier. So, and I've had this discussion with other people in the, you know, property development community, where they're thinking, how did you transition from an investor, you know, who had a couple of properties, to a developer? And I said, I just decided to, and it just happened.
Lin's first multi-dwelling development has already taught him many lessons.
We're currently involved in a 6-townhouse development, waiting for DA approval. I shared with you earlier that the current situation, but we're planning to proceed as planned. But obviously, just like any other project, there's going to be delays, and there's been a lot of learnings. But I'm grateful for those learnings, because it just means that I'm going to get a lot better the next project I do.
He describes how he got involved in this deal.
It was a product of the systems that we had in place. And when I say systems, I mean data vaulting and actually keeping track of all the things that are being submitted to council, and also keeping an idea of what the end value sales are, and making sure that you actually have a network of agents that you talk to regularly. And That's what I mean when I say systems. Now, being able to build six is not the norm in that area for that size block. Literally right next door, adjacent block, they built four. And but that was, you know, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago or something, 10 years ago. So it's not really applicable, right? But on the other side of my block, not on the other side of the road, as in the other side of my block, literally adjacent, the other side, is a comparable size block, obviously, same frontage, same size, very, very similar. They just submitted a DA, I think, early this year for four. So they were only able to submit four based on today's LEP and DCP. But what they didn't do was, which is what me and my wife and I did, was actually drive around the area and identify the ones that stand out, which is a process that, you know, it's something very simple. It's like the culmination of hours and hours and hours of research and work just to find out this one little tidbit. But that little bit of information, that little loophole, that little secret changes the deal completely. You know, it just flips it upside down. And what I've noticed is that's how you can't do what everyone else is doing, because everyone else can look at a block and say, oh, I can build four on that, and this is the price, and blah, 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 this is how much it is per square meter. But there's so much development happening in Sydney, I question how many of them are actually profitable if they were to be purchased today versus the ones that were purchased a long time ago and they've been holding on the land for a long time. So, you know, when I'm trying to compare actual, you know, developments that actually make money, it's pretty rare that were, you know, purchased to develop straight away, if that makes sense. Like in the under six or under 10 kind of townhouse kind of you know, space. So we're able to put six because we're utilizing a state planning policy that was able to allow us to do six. And this wasn't based on us talking to town planners or architects. Me and my wife had to suggest it based on what's been around. We gave them the idea.
Lin expands on how he managed to get approval for six townhouses on a block that would normally only have four.
A lot of people think, oh, you know, you go to a town planner and they'll give you the highest and best use. No, they're there to enforce the rules. They just tell you what you can and can't do. They're like lawyers, right? Lawyers aren't there to make you money. They're there to protect you and make sure everything's legal, blah, blah, blah. Town planners are just there to make sure that you follow the regulation and you can actually get approval, but they're not there to help you make money. I've learned that through many different types of town planners. So in this process, we suggested, hey, this something like this has been done over here. Can we do this same thing on our block? And, you know, they're like, oh, I guess you can. That's a much better question than asking a town planner, what's the best and highest use?
Yeah, or how many can you put on here? And they'll usually go, okay, that's the stock standard answer.
Stock standard answer. Yeah, stock standard question equals stock standard answer. So you need to do some work. This is what sets you apart. Other than that, what else does a developer do? You know, we're putting the deals together. I mean, if you're not willing to do that work, then what are you doing? What value are you adding to the process?
Lin discusses the submission timeline and road bumps along the way of this process.
Well, we were supposed to submit this afternoon, but there's been a slight hiccup, as I told you earlier. So maybe it'll be tomorrow instead. It's just things happen and you just have to go with it. You can't let these setbacks, you know, deter you from completing the project. One, because you're already in the project, but it's just persistence. That's the key. I'm always going to make mistakes. I've accepted the fact that I'm always going to make mistakes. Like in my business, my sister, who's my partner in business, because, you know, it's passed on to me and my sister, we both run the business. I encourage her to make mistakes because you can only learn from taking action. And if you're too scared to make mistakes, you just won't do anything. And that's what I did. I was like a worker in my family's business. You know, I was literally just do what I was told, head down. It was so silly. I wasted years doing that. You know, it's just silly. It didn't make any sense. So now because we were always encouraged not to make mistakes, but when you don't take mistakes, when you don't take risks, you just don't do anything, you know, and nothing happens.
How long do you think it's taken you from acquiring the site to this DA approval process? Like, how long has that taken so far?
It's taken 3 months longer than it should have because I dropped the ball there, where I assume that I found an architect who's done it, you know, done everything. And, you know, he's a very good architect. He's had a lot of experience and he's, you know, he's a great architect. He does his job. But management of an asset is important. You have to manage your team just like you have to manage an asset. So someone in your team could be very, very good, but if you don't manage them very well, the results aren't going to be very good. So I thought that he knows what he's doing, I didn't touch base with him as much as I should have. And we lost, you know, several months due to my negligence. That's what it was. You know, it wasn't because I wasn't working. I'm always working, but I wasn't working in the bottlenecks where was necessary. That's it.
Well, it's really good that you shared that with us, because that's a great learning lesson. It's not just only for property development, but for business as well. What things do you mean by management? Like, how can someone learn from this that they can ensure that if they're working with architect or builder or so forth to manage it better, or how to improve?
It wasn't so much fear. It wasn't fear of, you know, stepping on this architect's toes, because I have spoken to other developers who are like, oh, you know, he's the best in the area and everyone's always chasing him and he got upset at me and, you know, blah, 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 and they felt whatever. It's just taking that responsibility to figure out a way, acknowledging where the bottleneck could be, preempting those kind of things. I mean, what I could have done was, rather than breathe down his neck every 2 weeks and go, hey, where are you up to? Hey, where are you up to? Hey, where are you up to? I could have just done it in a different way, where it's like, hey, you know, how's it going? Just touching base because I need to let my investors know, something like that. Well, he can't really blame me if I need to give an update to my investors, right? I mean, that's perfectly fine. I'm a worker just like him. I'm a cog in the wheel. It's not Michael who's chasing you and hassling you. It's something that I need to do for my job. So I had that. Available to me, but I didn't do it, and I don't know why. But, you know, now I see the consequence of it. I mean, it's very easy to learn lessons. I mean, if you read any book, you know, now in business or property, there's so many lessons to learn, but you are not in the right state to learn them. Like, you learn them, but you're not actually learning them because they're not really applicable to you at that point and time. So it's like hearing a quote. Oh, that's a great quote. Oh, I can relate to that, but not really.
Lin has his sights set on his next development opportunity, which is not always easy in this changing market.
We're looking at acquiring another site. Well, there was one I was pretty heavily invested in, which was a 13 townhouse site. But after further investigations, not so much that the area was no good or the project was not feasible to continue, but it's just from a financial landscape kind of thing, what everyone, if you're in development, is talking about is pre-sales. So if you're actually building something at the affordable end, they're moving. Things that are on the middle and higher end, they're moving slower. So that's really interesting, and I was actually targeting the affordable side of things, side of the landscape. But the issue is, because it was for 13 townhouses, I would have required a lot more pre-sales, and right now pre-sales are very hard to obtain. End product, no problem, I would sell it, no big deal, I'm very confident. But pre-sales, that's the bottleneck.
And
that's a learning I'm going through right now. If I didn't proceed as if I was going to, and I was going to proceed with this 13 pack, I would not have realized how important pre-sales are and why I need to find other alternative financial solutions, because it's something that, you know, at the beginning I didn't really want to focus on, but it is something that people talk about. But everyone's always trying to think about how increasing the yield or putting more dwellings, highest, bestest use of a site, you know, the technical side of things, the planning side of things, the design. But no one wants to actually think about, well,
the sales and the marketing side of things,
the sales, marketing, and the financing. It's so important, you know. That's what I'm starting to notice. And I'm grateful for that lesson, because I'm going through it right now.
Yeah,
which definitely is why last night I literally had dinner with a broker, you know, because I wanted to know more, you know? Just, yeah, that's what you have to do. You have to do.
Coming up after the break, we'll explore how Michael Lin ensures efficiency within his team in property development.
It's all mindset. I mean, you and I in our, you know, day-to-day, you know, other life, we know how to call people up, follow people up.
Learn more about his mindset.
No matter what I've done, no matter how many mistakes I've made, I've always been up. So now I've lost that fear.
Who his mentors were and how he found them.
I've met Jason at a business event in a different kind of context. You know, I really liked the way he presented himself. He seems really genuine, and he is genuine.
All that and much more coming up next. I'm Tarun Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Lin shares advice on how to get through a tough situation in property development, such as the one he was in with his initial architect.
It's all mindset. I mean, you and I in our, you know, day-to-day, you know, other life, we know how to call people up, follow people up. These are things that we've already, skills that we've already, it's like sales, you know. Most people think they're not salespeople, but by just being who you are a salesperson. You are very manipulative. You manipulate your parents into feeding you, into whatever, buying you toys. We've learned all these skills already. They're skills that are inherent to us as people, but we just try, like I said earlier, like just we, for some reason, we isolate each skill to that particular context and not apply it to the rest of the, you know, different facets of our lives. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just learn by fire.
He further explains his mindset in dealing with his projects and gives some advice to people starting out in property development.
So I'm just going to go right in. I mean, I'm going from a 6 to a 13. I mean, sure, I didn't get the 13, but that's fine. I have no fear to do a 13 pack. It's nothing. It's nothing now. Even if it was more than that, what's the difference? It's the same thing. It's the same process. It's just, it's fear is just a mental construct in your mind. So why am I setting limitations on myself? Like that's all I how I see it.
So would you suggest then for someone who's starting out in property development to start on a small or to jump into a big development?
This is funny. You know, it's a really funny thing because people give different advice, right? Like the advice that they give and what they actually do are sometimes, well, I've noticed a pattern, very different. So I would advise for somebody else to go for something small, be conservative. I do. I really do. That's how I would advise somebody else. But if it was me, I wouldn't. Does that make sense? I don't know. Because we're all different. I don't know. I don't know. It's like double standards. But I just – it's not because I'm super confident that I'm going to succeed. It's just because I know where I want to get to and I know – you know, I have to do this to get there. And if I don't, I'm not going to get to where I want to get to. That's all it is. So I would do it. I would go for a, you know, I mean, I went from, I've gone to a six pack. People don't start with a six pack. It's also just being confident in what you decide to do, just actually doing the work behind it. I mean, I wouldn't do a six pack if I didn't have the confidence behind me of actually doing the work, of doing months of contacting people and talking to people and just everyone I can speak to about the topic.
Yeah.
And if people are passive, then they should do something a bit more passive.
Next, Lin discusses programs and mentors that helped him in his journey of investment and property development.
I joined a program. I'm not going to name that one because I didn't really like it. So I'm not going to badmouth them. But I didn't really enjoy that property program. You know, that's not going to stop us, even though it wasn't such a great experience. We joined another program from I Love Real Estate, which is hosted by Dipna Boholt. She's a very established property educator in Australia. And really, that program, you know, they have different tiers, of course, but that program really opened my eyes as to what's possible. So, you know, that $20,000 regional deal, I didn't even know you could do this. You know, I'd even heard of this strategy before. So when I heard that, you know, when she first spoke about it, I had to find out how to do it. So that's what I did. And I spent a couple of months on that, and that's how I got that deal. And then as part of her kind of, you know, affiliate, I guess one of her ex-students, Jason Byron and Amy Tang, they have their own development program. Because I've met Jason at a business event in a different kind of context, you know, I really liked the way he present himself. He seems really genuine, and he is genuine. Now that I think I can safely say we're friends, where he's a, you know, laid back and very relatable kind of person. And actually, he, you know, we related based on our background for in working for our fathers in our father's business, and you know, the trial and fire that's involved in that kind of, you know, scenario. And when I already know his background in development, and you know, when he had a program, I jumped at the opportunity, and you know, he's the mentor that's really been helping me to transition from a property investor to a developer. I mean, it's not like he's giving me specific information, but it's just having that mentor behind you who actually wants you to succeed that really makes a big difference. You know, it's not pep talk, because I'm always motivated. Never had a problem with that, but it's more so someone who can steer you in the right direction sometimes.
Lynn emphasizes the value of having a mentor.
And they're exposed to so many other people who've done what you've wanted to do. I mean, yeah, they've done what you want to do, but also they're just exposed to a lot of people like yourself who are at the same level, like the same stage or stage in your journey. So they're a fount of wisdom and knowledge. And it's not about them telling you what to do, because if you're looking for someone to tell you what to do, a mentor is not the right person for you. You're going to be disappointed, and then you're just kind of have a, you know, I don't know, have negative feelings about the whole process. And that's not what a mentor is. I mean, a mentor can't do it for you. I mean, it's just, that's not a mentor. That's a mother,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
spoon feeding, you know,
exactly. Like, people complain if they're not getting results, but did you do the work? I mean, it's, they've told you their secret, their IP, what, how they did it. But if you're not taking any action, can you really hold them responsible? It just, it doesn't make any sense. It's just like, you know, people always looking for one thing, for like another get rich quick or success strategy, you know, and there's lots of them, and they all work. They all work, but that doesn't mean they all work for everybody, because not everyone does the work. That's all it is. And people are always looking for a magic bullet. And it's just, it's something that we all know in, you know, other facets of our lives anyway. But for some reason, when it comes to wealth creation, we somehow expect magic bullets to appear, you know, like lottery tickets.
In terms of other resources, Lynn draws on a live event he attended that helped shape his mindset.
I'm a big fan of Tony Robbins, his live events, not the one that's for motivation, but the one that's about designing a life, because, you know, my family's always about business and entrepreneurship and everything. You know, it's just our DNA. But, you know, with my significant other, my wife, that's not necessarily her, I guess, part of her DNA. And, you know, she wants to enjoy herself. I mean, I like to enjoy myself too, but we're very conservative. We don't dance, whereas, you know, in her background, you know, her family dances at Christmas, and I used to get anxiety every single year leading up to Christmas because I didn't want to have to dance, you know. It's just completely different. But after going, it's just like, oh, you know, Kris Kringle is dancing. You have to dance while you're giving someone a present. And it's just, oh my gosh. It just, I would be anxious about it. I'd actually have anxiety leading up to Christmas. So, you know, when I went to Tony's event, it was just, you know, you really sit down and actually question the things that you've accepted or just things that you take for granted, and really kind of reassess your life. So the program's all about designing your life. And I was having a discussion last night with the broker. He's going to go to the next event, and it's I'm very, very excited for him. It's one of the best things I've ever done on a personal level, because life isn't just about making money. I mean, I like making money, but not because I like money, because I actually don't spend money. I just like making it, because it's just some, what are you going to do? You know, like, it's like a form of achievement. So, you know, I'm able to, I guess, peel that back a little bit. You know, money's important and success and achievement, but, you know, there has to be a reason beyond just a scorecard, you know, and that's where we're trying to enrich our lives by helping others and helping family. And I don't know, life is better, you know, after you actually take time to actually think about what you're doing rather than just doing it mindlessly and not actually considering why you're doing the things that you're doing. So I on a personal level, I highly recommend that.
He also shares some book recommendations.
Books that I just read, Sapiens, which is a very popular book for a very long time now. There are points where it makes you a little bit depressed. So if that's a concern, don't read it. But it's a very, very informative read. But a book that I really, really enjoy currently is Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins. I think it's from the 1800s or something, but it has, well, 1900s? I don't know, early 90s, 90s, 1900s. I don't know what year it's from.
That's okay.
It's old.
Sounds like a really good book.
But it's fantastic. It's a very easy to read book, and it's chock full of so many golden nuggets. And I even though it's so short, every chapter is maybe about 5-6 pages, or even 2 or 3. I have to reread it several times because it's just condensed gold, not just for business and also for property, but just I don't know. I'm liking it a lot. It's a very short book, but I haven't finished reading it. That's because I keep rereading the same chapter again and again and again. Like, they're just, yeah, they're universal. That's what I think.
Lin exposes his why, especially why he does what he does and how he prioritizes his life.
My why is family. Yeah. I'm very family conscious. We're very collective, you know. Everything we do is together. And but after going to, you know, reassessing in my life and everything, it's not about abandoning family or abandoning friends, but just realizing that you have to prioritize things in your life. So my priority now is it's just 3 things rather than before, where it was just everything. All these different things are important, but if I had to pick, and I did pick, it was my wife, my family, and business, because business is integral to my family. So that was it. Everything else is just, you know, just not that they're not important, but just having that clear distinction, again, mindset, it just made things easier. And you're not going through the same pain. I mean, you can't always be hanging out with your mates, you know, you wish you could, but making that decision, I didn't have the pain of not hanging with my mates because I wasn't hanging out with them as much as I was anyway. So why do the exact same thing but also have the pain as well? So, you know, after making that decision, it just kind of changed things and just, you know, reassess our values. And so that's my why, just family, and providing, you know, like, because I'm a provider, like that's how I think of myself.
Next, he shares the best advice he's ever received.
The best piece of advice, I don't know where I got this from, but I guess actually taking the time to know what you want in life. I mean, that's one of the hardest things ever. And no one knows what they actually want. People just do things. They, you know, they're set on a course, you know, they go to uni and become an accountant or whatever it is. And then they're unhappy at 40 or whatever it is. And, you know, at any stage, they could have just stopped. And it's hard. It's mentally, it's hard to go against the grain, but you'll be happier for it. And why are we on this planet if we're not here to be happy? You know, are we here to suffer? It just doesn't make any sense. So take the time. Yeah, take the time to actually think about what makes you happy. Why do you want the things that you want? And do you actually want them? Or is it because someone else programmed you? You know, not because they had any malice, but just, is it actually what you want? Is it because it's what someone else wants for you? You know, that kind of thing. Because, I mean, I did badly in, you know, academically, and that was, you know, part of my story when I was younger. But I'm happier now because I actually, not because I'm, you know, more successful, just because I know what I want and I have clarity and I have direction, and that just makes things easier. Whether I was doing development or, you know, graphic design, does it really matter? Whatever you do, as long as you're happy, then you're the richest person in the world anyway, so who cares?
Lin shares a daily personal habit he believes contributes to his success.
Work. I don't know. I'm always thinking about work. That's a problem that I have. I can't switch off. So I actually have to do personal things in, you know, normal hours, and then I'll actually stay up late and actually do the work. Like, I don't know. It's fun for me because, oh, that's what it is. That's a habit I have. I've inceptioned myself. I was a lazy kid before. But it's not because I was lazy. It's because I was doing things that I didn't enjoy. Whereas now I'm following things I actually am passionate about. It just changes things. That saying of work is, was it, it's not work if you enjoy it. It's true.
It is true.
I mean, I work 7 days a week. I'm happy. I don't need work life. This is work life balance. You know, it's not that hard when you do what you enjoy. So.
If Lin met himself 10 years ago, he'd have this to say.
I have many things to say to myself, not all good, but I think one of them would be don't stress, because I 10 years ago, yes, I would have been 21. I was going through a stressful period in my life because I wasn't sure what I wanted, and I didn't really particularly like working in the family business. So, you know, I would have told myself, look, everything's going to work itself out. You know, don't worry about it too much and just enjoy yourself. Because at that time, I was actually I wasn't enjoying myself, but I also wasn't doing what I was supposed to do, if that makes sense. I was sort of like in limbo. And, you know, when you're in limbo, when you have no clarity, you have no direction, it's what do they call it? Purgatory, right? Like, it's just, it's not hell, but it's not exactly pleasant either. So, I would have told myself to just, you know, just enjoy yourself. You know, what will happen is supposed to happen, and, you know, everything will work itself out.
And that's the great thing to be able to see now, all in hindsight.
It's all internal. You know, it's all internal. I mean, yeah, like, I could have been happy and still be in the same position, but why did I have to be unhappy while, you know, doing nothing? So that's, yeah, it's all internal.
In the next 5 years, he's looking forward to more development and growing this side of his business exponentially.
Oh, I'm pretty sure we're going to do a lot more development. So we're at that stage where we're going to scale. So very excited. And I'm excited about, I have a couple of opportunities in different fields related to property, but I just like property for the actual development. I want to build stuff. That's what I really like. I like building things that people, not everyone else is building. I don't know. I just like to build. That's what's exciting to me. The idea of what I'm going to build, you know, in the next 5 years. That's pretty cool.
Finally, as a child to a family business, Lin believes both luck and skill are involved in his success.
Being a child of business, and, you know, this is a common theme it's a common theme with children of business owners, where a lot of people think you're lucky, you're inheriting a business. They do not understand that it is harder being picking up the slack from your father. It's really, really hard. It's one of the hardest things I had to go through in my life. I think I lost all my hair at 21 because of that reason. I think I started losing hair within like a month of working for the family. That's how stressful it was. No, seriously, it just started falling out. You know, I was 21 years old. Like, everyone in the family has, you know, thick head of hair. So it's not as, but people always want to see the results, and they don't want to see the work that you put behind. No one knows about the hours that I spend. No one knows that I stay up to 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, I would say 3-4 nights a week doing work because I enjoy it, but still I do the work. So I would say luck is important, but you make your own luck. Because I did the work, I'm in a position where I, you know, have greater luck. You can increase your luck by putting yourself in a position to take advantage of these things. There's no point, for example, finding a winning lottery ticket on the ground, but you don't know what it is. You've never heard of a lottery ticket before. I don't know. It's a bad example, but you know what I mean. Like, if you didn't even know what it was, if you didn't do the work. So there's no point having luck if you didn't also do the work to make that opportunity actually, you know, valuable. Yeah. And intelligence is a I don't consider myself very intelligent. I didn't do very well at school. I'm not particularly articulate. It's not my skill. And I never worked corporate. I've never had a, you know, proper job, I guess. But I think that EQ is really important. Just that persistence and, just having those values instilled in me from a young age really helped me. And, from my parents' perspective, I was probably a massive failure as a child. But no, really, they're always comparing me to, look at your cousin, he's got a double degree. Look at him, blah, blah, blah. Everyone thought doctor this. And there's just that, expectation. And I was the black sheep who did badly at school. I mean, the Asian kid who didn't do well at maths. What? That doesn't make any sense. Like there's just that kind of, the stereotype is real in certain cases. So, I think intelligence is overrated. It's EQ. Yeah. Anyone can do anything. We're in a world of abundance right now.
Yeah, everyone defines success differently. And I guess at the end of the day, you got to define success for yourself, not defined by your parents. And we all know that now. So.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. but what's interesting is, they would probably, not to my face, but say, oh, yeah, Michael's doing all right for himself now. I think they're more happy that I found my way. I found what I enjoy. So.
If you want to find out more about his projects or contact Lin, here's how.
Go to my website at www.chathamprojects.com and they can just leave a message or send a message from our development website. I most likely I will get it.
Thank you so much to Michael Lin for joining us in this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about his journey, then visit our website at propertyinvestory.com.